And now it's time for us to discuss more of these headlines and simple keywords with Adam joining us via Zoom. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Lena. Loving the headphones there. You usually have earphones.
Yes,
you look
I
like
do.
A proper radio DJ now.
As opposed to all the other days where I didn't look so proper.
Looks more natural, but now you like look the part, basically.
I forgot my earbuds in my car, but more importantly, this has better sound.
Yeah, I
better mean, sound quality.
I mean, I presume so. It's got a bigger capacity for sound and thought again. Technical aspects of it.
It's
Terry
funny.
Blossom festivals are starting today, by the way, just FYI.
Excuse me, outside the air quality?
No, Cherry Blossom festivals are starting from today. Sorry, wasn't that clear?
No, Friday morning, you're right, finally, yeah. Right? Belated, but yeah. I mean, it's about time. This weekend should be beautiful if we get cleaner air, that is.
Yeah, and if you're in Seoul, the Yeouido Cherry Blossom Festival runs until April 2nd, so relatively short, so if you are in Seoul, in the central area, then check it out.
All right, thanks for the updates. Let's get started with keyword news. We have many headlines to cover as always, and this is our first pick of the day.
UN monitor ends.
So Russia has vetoed the annual renewal of a UN panel that checks if countries are following sanctions against North Korea. This raises concerns that UN sanctions on North Korea may have already weakened. We've had similar conversations on such, but for the UN to discuss it in detail, I guess that's the important point. What's the latest?
Yeah, so this just goes to show that the rift between Russia and the Western nations are deepening and further expanding. The vote of the 15-member council was 13 in favor, Russia against, and China abstaining. So Russia was the only country to veto the renewal. Now, it will end the panel's operation when its current mandate expires at the end of April. The vote has no impact, though, on the actual sanctions against North Korea, which remain in force. It's just following up on them that has basically ended in terms of the UN monitoring it. Now, Russia had actually never before tried to block the work of the panel. The group has been renewing annually the panel by the UNSC for 14 years. So it is the first time in such a period that Russia has vetoed the renewal. The Russian ambassador to the UN told the council before the vote that Western nations are trying to strangle North Korea and that sanctions are losing their relevance and effectiveness in preventing the proliferation of nuclear weapons in the country. He accused the panel of increasingly being reduced to playing into the hands of Western approaches, in his words. Now, the West accuses Russia of just trying to avoid problems because it might be trading weapons with North Korea, which the panel's reports of late have hinted at. So, of course, something that Moscow is not happy about. And, of course, it's brought about condemnation from South Korea as well. South Korean ambassador to the UN, Hwang Jun-guk, blasted Russia's move, saying there was no justification for the veto. He compared the veto to breaking a CCTV camera to avoid being caught for a crime, of course, alluding to the fact that Russia is suspected of engaging in arms deals with North Korea and trying to hide the fact. Of course, that is something that both Russia and North Korea have been denying, though. Now, he criticized Moscow for prioritizing its self-interest over the collective responsibility of maintaining international peace and security. So, yeah, I mean, the UN panel did play an important part in trying to make sure that the sanctions were still in place and that countries were following them. But, of course, without Big Brother looking, there might be some countries that might be a bit more lax in terms of the sanctions against North Korea, not specifically the United States and South Korea, but other countries, related parties as well, might start slacking is the concern anyway.
Once again, highlighting the quickly changing geopolitical landscape, we'll leave it there for now as we turn our attention to our second keyword, the latest on the ongoing medical strike. This is our second pick of the day.
Training ban.
So the government is adding pressure to striking trainee doctors. This time it's targeting interns, saying that they will be barred from training in the first half of this year unless they register for jobs by Tuesday. Now, this means that in their academic plans, there might be a whole sum of a year delay, which is a significant amount of time. What's the latest?
Right. So Deputy Health Minister Tong Byung-wan urged intern doctors to return to training hospitals within this month. He pointed out that if interns don't get registered in time, so April 2nd is the deadline, they'll have to wait until September or even next March to start their training, of course, putting a dent in their academic schedules and, of course, their subsequent plans to become fully fledged doctors. And he urged them to return to the medical field soon to continue providing patient care. The government is also working on cutting down work hours for training doctors as well, so they won't have to work more than 80 hours a week or 36 hours in a row, but these new hours won't start until 2026. So there are some plans in place to try and make the working environment a little bit better for these training doctors. But of course, yes, it does take time for them to be implemented. They're going to start trying this plan out in May, though, at some hospitals to see how it goes. So nothing finalized at the moment. Hospitals that join this trial will also get extra support, and they'll also get some perks when it's time to decide how many new interns they take in starting from 2025. Now, with a mass walkout by trainee doctors continuing for more than 5 weeks, major general hospitals temporarily shut down part of their wards and rearranged staff. Now, the five major hospitals are said to have suffered more than 1 billion won of losses per day and have been in emergency management mode. And Prime Minister Han Duck-soo is therefore set to meet with the heads of the five major hospitals today, in fact, in the afternoon, to work out a solution and reiterate why the government is pushing for an increase in the medical school admissions. Now, the new KMA chief, Lee Myung-taek, is set to hold his first press conference today as well, before that meeting with between Prime Minister Han Duck-soo and the five major hospital heads. He's already been very vocal about his stance against the government's medical quota hike plan, but eyes are on what he has to say in his press conference. We might get some details of what the Korea Medical Association is willing or not willing to do in terms of trying to find a compromise, if any, with the government. But as things stand and look at the moment, not much difference. So it's probably be a repeat of what he's been saying and the KMA has been saying up until now. And the government, of course, also adamant with its plan and not really, really willing to budge. So this standoff may continue.
But we'll be on the lookout for the new KMA chief's first press conference later today. Let's move on to our third keyword of the day.
Rural youth.
All right, so widening regional gaps, how do we close it? Now, the government aims to maintain the rural youth population ratio at approximately 22% by 2027, similar to last year's levels, to ensure that it doesn't drop too fast in the next few years. This effort includes providing money, homes to young farmers and entrepreneurs starting businesses in the countryside. Should we relocate? Tell us the details.
That is part of the kind of incentive of trying to encouragement anyway from the government and trying to make these rural areas a little bit more appealing. Now, the plan includes making it easier for innovative businesses to test their technologies in rural areas by giving them access to community resources and support for office and living spaces to boost jobs and industries related to farming. The government will help industries connected to agriculture grow by setting up special zones and encouraging collaboration between different organizations. And for areas at high risk of depopulation, tax incentives for second homes will be discussed with relevant ministries as well. So a lot of red tape concerning multiple homeowners, for example, might be relaxed somewhat. Furthermore, the government will lift some restrictions on small pieces of farmland in areas that have basically lost their original purpose, making it easier to use these lands differently as well. So we could see them being used for certain infrastructure and certain cultural spaces and other means as well. Next year, the government will work on a new law to help manage and support empty houses in rural areas better. There's been a concern that a lot of housing in these rural areas are basically empty and not being occupied, which could, of course, affect real estate markets. They'll also start projects to renovate empty houses with the help of companies and local governments as well to make them more appealing. To make rural and mountain tourism better, the government will set up centres for people who want to work in the countryside and develop tourism packages for different areas as well. They'll also offer various support for companies that want to get involved in revitalising rural areas, so giving them some incentives to invest their money and time in areas outside of the capital region. They also plan to improve medical services in rural areas, support public hospitals and set up mobile systems for medical consultations as well. That, of course, ties into this whole plan of medical school admissions quota hike. For education, the government wants to find ways to run schools that fit well with rural areas and make it easier for young people and newlyweds to move to the countryside as well. Will it work? That is the question.
All right. Let's move on to our fourth keyword of the day.
Single parent aid.
So next year, the government plans to start a new system to help single parents with child support by paying them upfront and then getting the money back from non-custodial mothers and fathers later on. Can you tell us more about the plan?
Right, so the new single parent family support advance payment system, as it's being dubbed, will be expanded to cover more families, basically. The payment period will be extended to last until the child reaches the age of 18. The plan aims to expand and transform the existing temporary emergency child support program, which provides child support of 200,000 won per child per month for up to 1 year to single parent families with an income of up to 75% of the median level. Now, in response to criticism that the system is insufficient to help families in need, the government has expanded the eligibility criteria to families who earn up to 100% of the median income level. Now, the government will also place administrative sanctions and criminal penalties on non-custodial parents who refuse to pay support. The plan also includes specific measures to improve the child support collection rate, which is only at just over 15% actually currently. That's because of one big problem right now, which is it's hard to collect child support if the parent who owes money, so non-custodial parents, doesn't agree to share their financial details. And this results in a whole court process which could take up to 8 months, and within that time the non-custodial parents could get rid of or not claim their financial assets and basically skirt the law. Now, the government is looking to change the relevant law. The goal is to get the rate of successfully collected child support up to 40% by the year 2029. Now, some 19 families are expected to benefit from the government's new plan. And separately, a man in his 40s has been jailed, actually, for not paying 90 million won in child support to his ex-wife for their two children over 10 years. This is reported to be the first time someone has actually received a prison sentence for not paying child support in the country. So the government is basically cracking down, especially on non-custodial parents who refuse to pay child support when they should be. Basically.
Okay. And with that, we move on to our final keyword of the day.
Bus strike ends.
In less than a day, thousands of bus drivers in Seoul have returned to work after launching a strike over wages. This came nearly 12 hours after the strike disrupted almost all bus routes in the capital. So they did work out a solution. What's the latest?
Yeah, so started at 4 a.m. And so, of course, the morning commute was hit hardest in the morning rush hour. But it did end just over 11 hours. The strike ended after the drivers did reach a wage agreement with management. And this came after Seoul Mayor Oh Se-yoon had pleaded for a swift compromise. The Seoul Bus Labor Union resumed bus services at 3:10 p.m. yesterday, immediately after the deal. So this cleared the way for the resumption of bus services ahead of the evening rush hour. Now, both parties agreed on an hourly pay raise of 4.48% and a special bonus of 650,000 won for the holidays, a time when usually there are more bus operations happening. The union had originally asked for an almost 13% wage increase, but they agreed to settle to about 4.5%. Now, the full-scale strike by the city's bus drivers was actually the first in 12 years. The last one didn't last that long. It was actually about 20 minutes that the strike lasted. This one a bit longer, but short-lived in the grand scheme of things, especially when we compare it to the medical strike that's going on as well. Seoul City says the wage hike will cost the capital around 60 billion won extra. However, they assured that this increase in wages won't immediately lead to higher bus fares. Mm. There has been a recent fare hike in terms of public transport. So another one will surely have angered the public and those who do commute using public transport. But apparently, according to Seoul City anyway, no difference in the fares.
All right. So the cities and the bus companies will bear the burden. In fact, for the time being, the striking bus drivers got what they wanted, right? A wage hike.
Right, some degree. But yes, so the strike is over. Mm. So if you do utilize buses, then surely it's good news for you.
Today should be smoother sailing. Thank you so much, Adam, for a week's worth of coverage. Have a great weekend.
You're very welcome. Have a great weekend. I'll see you next week. Enjoy the cherry blossoms.
It's like we're pushing it on our listeners. Yeah. Enjoy the cherry blossoms. Enjoy the cherry blossoms. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.